Hello, Frank?
Yeah.
This is Todd from WREK.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay.
I'm a long-time fan. Just have a few questions for you, really.
Okay.
I'm calling from Atlanta, in case you didn't, that they didn't tell you who.
I know where WREK is.
All right. Okay. Let's see where I want to start here. First thing, we're doing a 7.5-hour special the Saturday before you're here.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when this will be aired. And I just wanted to ask you a few questions about one of my main interests lies in your last two records before the new one, The Them or Us.
Mm-hmm.
I do a show of 20th century classical music on Sundays called Good Noise for Modern Man, and I've been playing a lot of the Boulez conducts as well as the London Symphony one.
Mm-hmm.
And this is your first rock record in a couple years, The Them or Us.
Yeah.
So I was wondering what brought you back to rock and roll again.
Well, I decided after being the keynote speaker at the American Society of University Composers Convention in Columbus, Ohio in the springtime that was a dead world.
Dead?
Yeah. So I figured that, I had some weird ideas about what the serious music world was like in the United States, and I spent the last couple of years piddling around in that area, and I always thought rock and roll was corrupted and pitiful, but actually American serious music is worse, so at least in rock and roll you can have some laughs, whereas in that other world you can't. So I opted for reality.
Was it the concert scene or recording, or what was the getting grants? The main pitiful element
is that the process of writing new music for an American audience is the most futile thing that a person could engage in. The second most futile thing, and probably more dangerous, is teaching other people how to do it. Because there is no way that a person who learns in college how to write music is going to be able to earn a living doing it. There is no audience for it. People just literally don't give a shit. And so I told them at that speech they gave them, I said, the best thing you can all do is go get a real estate license.
I'm sure.
Nobody wants to hear what you write.
Have your records been set? Have those two records sold well?
Well, the Boulez album is in the top 10 of the classical charts. It's number 7 this week, and the London Symphony Orchestra album sold much better than the Boulez album. But it's been out a longer time. We're moving up toward 100,000 units on the LSO album, and I think that the Boulez album is only up to about 15,000 right now.
They haven't sent us one of those yet. They sent us the LSO, so it might be somewhere in that department where that lies. I don't know.
Well, remember, the LSO album was a Barking Pumpkin release distributed through CBS. And the Boulez album is an Angel release and going through the normal major record company machinery, which means it gets on the charts and all the rest of that stuff. But the fact of the matter is that the pitiful little Barking Pumpkin album sold more units.
I'm sure that'll change. So the other area that you were going to try, it appears, was Broadway with Thingfish?
Yeah, I wrote it and recorded it, but I couldn't get anybody to put up the money for it. And the Thingfish three-box set with the complete staging instructions and the libretto and some pictures and stuff will be out in about 3 or 4 days. Just getting ready to ship that now. So you'll at least be able to hear it. You won't be able to see it, but you'll be able to hear it.
It seems like that's happened throughout your career with the Uncle Meat movie and a lot of the other things that, you know, were projected to come out. And
well, you have to understand that I'm self-financed. I can only afford to do projects that I have money to do, and a record costs so much, whereas a Broadway show costs millions more. And movies are even more expensive than that. And the way shows and movies get financed, it generally is a bunch of people who are full of cocaine sit around and laugh at something, and then if it makes everybody with stuff up their nose laugh, then that's what gets produced.
cocaine decisions, right?
That's right. That's what it is. And, you know, but basically all these people with cocaine up their nose are only accountants deep down. You know, they're all looking at the numbers. And they don't do something just because it's so weird it must be done. They do something because they think that they're going to make billions of dollars on it. And it's like they run it through a computer, or they base it all on, let's give the kids what they want.
Which brings you back to rock and roll.
Well, that's the way rock and roll works, yeah. That's the way the major companies do it. They don't even listen to the cassettes that come in anymore. They look at the publicity picture, and if the person in the front of the picture has a good hairdo, then that group gets signed.
Or good glove.
Or good glove, right?
Yeah. With a good glove and good hairdo and some diagonal zippers, you're assured of at least 6 months of success in the pop music industry. That's something they don't teach the composers in college.
What kind of change in this year's teenage rock combo can we expect? You got the same band that you toured with last time? Or?
No, it's a different band. The main difference is that there is masses more of me playing guitar in this show. Finally got a hold of a Stratocaster that I really enjoy, so I've been playing a lot more. And it's a seven-piece band, three guitars, two keyboards, bass, and drums. And the musicians are Chad Wackerman on drums, Scott Tunis on bass, Ike Willis on guitar and vocal, Ray White guitar and vocal, Bobby Martin keyboard, sax, and vocal, and Alan Zavod on keyboards.
He played with Pawnee a while back, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. I'd heard a rumor before when you, I think I read it in the New York Times, where you said that you, when you were going to go back to rock and roll, that you were going to go back to I got an idea, that more of the Reuben and the Jets sort of
period. We have one whole stretch of the show that we don't do it all the time, but we have a whole stretch of 1950s group harmony songs that we do.
Like to hear those here, that's for sure.
Well, we do WPLJ, Night Owl, Cocksucker's Ball, The Closer You Are, No No Cherry, and we've been working on Valerie. But depending on what kind of market you're playing in, there's certain cities that like oldies, so you can do that. Philadelphia is one of them. And I don't know whether Atlanta really is an oldies market or not.
Well, they certainly aren't a new market, I don't think so.
They're not a new wave market?
I guess that's what they try to be, you know, that new music, new wave.
Yeah, well, I think I picture Atlanta more as a blues market, and we have an interesting hybrid that should be amusing for the people in that area. We have a song called Bamboozled by Love, which is basically a blues, but it's done with a new wave arrangement, which would probably be amusing to people down there. And we're also doing Advanced Romance, which is a blues number from the Bongo Fury album.
It's a great one.
And Trouble Every Day, and Penguin in Bondage. We're also doing In France from the Them or Us album. We do Whip and Post and Baby Take Your Teeth Out. And by the time we get there, we'll probably be playing Markson's Chicken. We've been rehearsing that during the sound check.
An ad that you'd like to tell the people of Atlanta?
Yeah. If they want to hear some good noise for Modern Man, they can come down there and see it live at the Civic Center.
All right. Can I get you to do a few IDs for
sure.
me?
Yeah. Hi, this is Frank Zappa. You're listening to Good Noise for Modern Man on WREK in Atlanta. Hi, this is Frank Zappa. Tune in on Saturday for 7.5 hours, which is probably more than any human being can stand, of music by me and various bands over the last 2,000 years on WREK in Atlanta. How would you like to win a pair of passes to see me, which is whom is, who is, Frank Zappa, at the Civic Center? All you gotta do is be the 8th caller to call in. This is Frank Zappa, and you're listening to Frets on WREK in Atlanta.
All right, that's all I really have. I'm sure you got a bunch more to do.
No, actually, you were supposed to be the last one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Da, 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 da.
I didn't mean to, you know, to...
What about the box? What's
going on? Oh, yeah, what's the story on the box set?
The box set, well, the only thing that's holding it up right now is they had two pages in the book that I didn't like, that the girls who were doing the art on the stuff, they had some pictures in there that I thought were stupid, so they just sent me the envelope today with the changes on the book, and once those are approved, they'll go to press with the thing, and we've already got 300 orders for it. It's coming out real quick, probably before Christmas.
Will there be any promos on that, or any disc jockey rates or anything like that?
Well, what we're going to do is I've made a single LP DJ sampler that has one or two cuts from each of the different albums built into it, but there's no way that I'm going to be able to send out, you know, DJ promos at $100 a box. The... all we're going to have is that single disc. It's got two cuts from Moving the Jets, two from We're Only In It for the Money, two from Freak Out, you know, like that.
And how do these LPs differ, and is there any additional material?
Yeah, there's the mystery disc, which has stuff that was recorded prior to Freak Out, also a couple of singles that were left out of the early albums. And what we've done is taken the original tapes. In the case of Freak Out, Absolutely Free, and Lumpy Gravy, we took the original two-track masters and re-EQ'd them and added digital reverb and cleaned them up, brought them up to the best contemporary recording standard that we could. And in the case of We're Only In It for the Money and Reuben and the Jets, we actually replaced the original bass and drum tracks with newly recorded digital bass and drums, did a complete digital remix on both those albums, and the results are stunning.
Do you think this will upset the fans of the old cheesy sound, or?
Well, you know, anybody who wants cheesy sound can go out and, you know, find a cheesy record and listen to it. The reason I did it is because I think that the material, if you're going to listen to it today, you might as well at least hear it with top end and hear it at a level on the vinyl where it's above the vinyl noise and stuff like that. You know, there's certain advances in recording technology that have come along in the last 20 years, and Freak Out is 20 years old. So I think that it's definitely an improvement over the originals.
Yeah, that will be nice, that's for sure. We'll probably, you know, go ahead and buy it for the station, so that'd be no problem. Trying to think of what else. What are the kind of important...
You know, the Francesco album is coming out in a few days.
No, I'm not familiar with that. That's the one, the Italian composer?
Yeah.
That you discovered somehow?
Yeah.
I guess you might want to tell us about that, since most people will be unfamiliar.
Yeah, this is a guy that lived between 1766, 1788, around that period, about the same time as Mozart. He wrote mostly string trios. He was a cello player from Milan. He was one of the first touring musicians. He was on the road before the French Revolution. His music was actually advertised for sale in an American newspaper circa 1776 in a little ad along with Mozart and Bach and all these other pieces that were published by this English publishing company. This was brought to my attention by a lady named Gillian Anderson from the Library of Congress. And he gave music lessons to the Duke of York. And I heard about him, went to the Library of Congress and the Berkeley Library, got the original scores and loaded it into the synclavier and had the synclavier play the music back and made an album from it.
What label will that be on?
That'll be on Barking Pumpkin.
Huh. And that'll be out soon?
Yeah, within the next few days. I just received a finished copy of the cover today in the mail. And it says on the front, Francesco, his first digital recording in over 200 years.
Do you think we'll be able to get a copy before next week, you think? Or is that pushing it?
Let's see. Jane might have some. Our office might ship Jane some so she could ship it to you. That's moving pretty fast, though. Because I don't even have a test pressing of the thing. All I've got is the cover art. And I know that they're getting ready to ship it. But, see, we're distributed by Capitol now. and they're real sluggish about getting stuff out to stations. I mean, we had to beat them over the head like crazy to get them to ship out DJ stuff on them or us.
We haven't even gotten one yet.
Yeah, they're real, you know, I'm not too thrilled with them, but since I'm not in Los Angeles to go over to their office and bang on their desk, I can't do anything about it because I'm out on the road, and meanwhile, my wife, who normally runs the record company, is in Rome with Moon and Dweezil. They're making a movie down there, and all I've got in Los Angeles is a secretary who just had a nervous breakdown, and my wife's sister. So it's a little hard to go over and say, now, Capital, I want you to hurry and ship out these Francesco DJ samplers to WREK in Atlanta.
Well, we'll see what we can do. I'll talk to Jane and see what we can arrange. I would definitely like to, arrange something, on Sunday, after soundcheck.
You are going to really enjoy that Francesco record. It's just an amazing thing to listen to because nobody's ever heard the music before. It's been sitting on a shelf for 200 years, and that's real nice stuff.
Looking forward to it. Do you have, this is sort of off the track, but do you have any interviews with Varese?
As a matter of fact, I do. I have a tape of Edgar Varese giving a lecture at Princeton University in 1955 or 56.
Because I found one, it was a broadcast of Deserts with, I believe the New York Philharmonic or some group in New York.
Yeah.
And it's got about a 12-minute interview with him talking about how he spliced up the tape for that piece.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to bring you one if you'd like to hear
that.
Oh,
yeah, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, I thought you'd be interested in that.
You know, it's so fascinating that there is a show in that part of the world that plays that kind of music and obviously has an audience or it wouldn't still be on the air. But it just goes to show you that in the South, people really like music just because it's music. And I guess you wouldn't suspect that there would be an audience for any modern music or any kind of strange stuff down there just because of the attitude that northern people have towards what goes on in the South. And if they only knew, I think that a lot of them would be a combination of surprised and envious of the musical life that you actually have in Georgia.
Well,
you got to be proud that thing is on the air because I don't know of any equivalent in any of the other northern towns.
Well, I owe you a lot of the inspiration. I started listening to Varese about 5 or 6 years ago, based on reading the cover of Freak Out and that sort of thing, and have progressed exponentially since because I've got probably 500 or 600 20th century records. I've done 3 hours of Varese special, which, as you might guess, is really tough to fit in there without doing different performances of the same piece.
Yeah.
And we did 12 hours of Stockhausen and a lot of things like that. We did 6 hours of Beefheart. So there's a lot going on at this station in particular. So, we hope to get a good response from this special on you this time.
You know, we did the other day, we have a bus we're using on this tour now, and it's got a big hi-fi system in the back, and we were driving from Norfolk, Virginia to Washington, D.C., and I was listening to a Penderecki cassette as we drove into Washington, D.C. If you can imagine hearing that music and looking at those buildings full of criminals, it's pretty stimulating.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, he's a real favorite of mine. I did 3 hours on him as well.
Yeah, well, I had the cassette was made from this obscure album, Penderecki Conducts Penderecki. It's about 12 years old. It was on RCA, and it's done with a Polish orchestra. And it's just a fabulous performance of a concerto for harpsichord, and there's another concerto for cello in there with all kinds of ungodly sounds going on. Have you heard that one yet?
I don't think so. That's not the Candide one, huh?
Nope. This is on RCA.
RCA. No, I don't have that.
Yeah, it's a really good performance. It's, one of the pieces has an electric bass on it. Mic'd from across the room, it's just playing as part of the string section.
The noise he got from an orchestra is just incredible.
Yeah. Well, keep your ears clean.
All righty. I look forward to talking to you on Sunday, you know, if we can talk to Jane. And, you know, I'd like to get, like, a few more snippets for the show on Sunday.
Okay. Yeah, you know what you ought to do? On the Boulez album, there's the that piece that starts off the second side, Outside Now Again.
Yeah.
You know that piece?
Yeah.
You know what it is, don't you?
I don't think so, no.
Are you familiar with the Joe's Garage album?
Yeah, the song Outside Now?
Right. Well, what that is that Steve Vai transcribed the guitar solo from Outside Now on the Joe's Garage album. That was loaded into the synclavier from his transcription, and then all the orchestration was built up around it. So what you ought to do is play the original and play that.
Okay, I'll do that for sure. Is the part two of the LSO thing going to come out?
I don't know. The problem with that is that it's not quite enough to make a whole album. I've got one whole side of a piece called Bogus Pomp, which is about 27 minutes. And then for the other side, I may have to just do computer stuff because the other pieces that they played are really not that well played to be released.
Maybe a little disclaimer on there might let slide by, you think? Or?
Well, I don't know. I just feel kind of weird about it because I didn't have enough money to spend the rehearsal time to get them really spiffing on the thing. And it was so expensive as it was that I just... It makes me feel a little bit weird to release it because, you know, they're making mistakes that I wouldn't even permit in a rock and roll band.
You love those classical unions, though, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Great rates, right?
Grab that tea break.
Double time.
All right, I got to go. I'll see you when I'm down there.
All righty. Thanks a lot.
See you. Bye-bye.
See you. Bye.